Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Steve Gerlach, partner with Bernstein Shure.
How are you, Steve?
I'm doing well, thanks, Dave.
Good. Welcome back to the HR Power Hour.
Thanks so much.
No, I appreciate you coming back. And you know, when you're always here, we get to talk about benefit law.
Isn't that exciting?
Now, for all you who are listening to the radio, please stay tuned. It's going to be riveting. We can make this fun. Yes. Yes, we can. It's true. We can. Because we're going to be talking about something that actually is going to be very interesting.
I agree.
And this is going to be something that may shake the medical benefit system up a little. And we're talking, of course, about association healthcare plans.
Right.
So there's been a change. Mm-hmm. As we know, the individual mandate is gone from the Obamacare Affordable Care Act, right? Corporate mandate is still there, right?
Yes,
it is. Right, still there. Who knows what will happen here in 2018? Gosh knows. But part of one of the changes that happened in a recent law is that they allow employers to go outside of state lines and buy through associations, correct?
Yes.
So let's talk about that.
Sure. So let's go back to October.
Okay.
On October 12th, President Trump issued an executive order basically directing the DOL to issue guidance that it would make it easier for association health plans to develop and flourish. And then on January 5th, the DOL issued proposed regulations. On January 5th, the DOL issued proposed regulations that are intended to do just that. And what they did is that as a technical matter, they worked inside of the ERISA statute, interpreting the ERISA statute, and broadened out the definition of employer so that an association and we'll talk about what an association is in a moment because that's also changed. But an association could be considered a single employer for the purposes of sponsoring a health plan. The benefit of that, or the potential benefits of that, because we're still in the proposed regulation realm, the potential benefits of that is that instead of having 30 or 40 or 100 employers, all with 30 or 40 or 100 employees, all of a sudden you've got one employer that has hundreds or potentially thousands of employees, and they're going to market. And they're looking at options such as, fully insured health plans and taking those numbers as negotiating power to the insurance carriers. Additionally, it opens up the self-insured option to them that probably was not available to them as a single employer. So broadens out the options for small employers. It gives them more bargaining power. And also, when you centralize a bunch of employers like that working under one health plan, there's economies of scale involved as well. They're able to have an administrator run that versus 30 or 40 or 100 administrators for each health plan, or one for each health plan. So then the crossing state lines bit happens in two ways, and it happens under the definition of an association. The the regs tell us that an association is what we currently think of as an association, which is a group of employers in roughly the same trade or industry that have a trade association. So that's one. But then the proposed regs also tell us that an association can simply be formed within state lines. There can be a state association, if you will. And then thirdly, they tell us that it can be considered a municipality, employers within a municipality. And in both the state and the municipality associations, the employers don't have to have that commonality of interest. They don't have to be in the same field or the same line of business.
Just a clarity.
Yeah.
So we're talking about employers that can band together. Let's use some examples that obviously I'm not saying these are examples. I'm using examples of what could be.
Yeah.
You said a trade group. So a manufacturer's trade group could get together crossing state lines and create a group of employers that do manufacturing. Correct? Doesn't necessarily
yes.
mean that they could be manufacturing widgets or they could be manufacturing steel. Doesn't really matter. Manufacturing in general,
yes.
right? Anything
yeah.
like that. In terms of in state lines, you mm-hmm. might talk about like the State Chamber of Commerce,
yes.
right? Could be a group that
could be
together.
Yeah, the chambers could
right. The
come
chambers
together.
Could get together and band together and say that from an employer standpoint.
Yes.
I guess the question then becomes: that's employers. Can this also be done on an individual basis? Like, could I'll use in the HR world SHRM, which has individual members joining an organization, not necessarily through a company, albeit mm-hmm. that some companies pay for their membership. Can individuals join together on a national basis? For example, and have a association healthcare.
Yeah, not under the regs as they're currently proposed. One item that's worth thinking about. So we're currently in the comment period.
Sure.
And that's the type of thing that maybe makes an excellent comment to the proposed regulations is ways to further broaden out the definition of an association so that it's not necessarily groups of employers. Right now, it's focused on employers. Now, there is one exception to that, which is working owners. Working owners are permitted to join an association health plan under the proposed regs.
So give an example. What would be like a working owner? What a individual who has a single sole proprietorship could join together, or does it have to have – do you have to have employees to do such?
It could be a sole proprietor, or it could be someone with employees.
All right. So in other words, if a group of people who, for lack of a better term, are consultants or a group of accountants who mm-hmm. just do their particular practice themselves, don't have any employees, could band together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And so that's still considered
an employer.
In fact,
we're seeing, you know, we've seen in the past groups, ones that I'm familiar with, manufacturers, dentists, I have seen with greater or less success attempting to do this in the past, attempting
okay.
to form a.
All right. Just wanted to make sure that we're clear on what that the definition is.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So these groups can get together.
Mm-hmm.
They could do in-state. They can do out-of-state. They could do whatever it is within – they could form together.
Yeah.
Some of the challenges that – let's start with the challenges.
Sure.
State laws are different.
They are. They absolutely are. And that this is one of the things that it's worth commenting on the regulations. And I'll take a step back here because I think it's really important whether you see something as a hurdle to be jumped over or something that just is a deal breaker really depends on your perspective. And I think it's important for folks to recognize the potential that's going on here. There's a real potential to help a lot of small employers really bend the cost curve. It's not going to happen this year. But, you know, within a couple, 3 years to start to see those numbers playing out, there's a real potential here. And it's going to take some political will to get this across the finish line. A piece of that political will is how do we deal with the fact that state laws are different? There are a couple of ways to address that issue. So one, and actually there's two pieces to the state laws being different. The first one being that you have what's commonly known as the race to the bottom or regulatory arbitrage. And what that is where let's say an association decides to form a health plan in a state that is very lightly regulated. And then they decide to sell that health plan across state lines in other states where where that association, had it been formed there, would be violating those states' laws. So that kind of race to the bottom is a concern from the regulatory perspective. And we've been meeting with Eric Chapa, the main superintendent of insurance, and this is a concern of his as well. On the other side of it is we don't want to put employers in the position where, or employers, AHPs, in the position where they have to comply with the state laws of every single state that they're operating in, and some are lower regulation and some are higher regulation. And
that's a nightmare.
It's not
enforce.
Doable. It's
almost unenforceable.
Yeah, exactly. So what we're looking at is, or considering, and this is just a couple of ideas, and I encourage folks that are interested in this to go ahead and take advantage of the comment period. One thing is a model statute, asking the DOL to issue, look, this is a model statute that we think would work for this. We recognize that constitutionally we cannot require each state to adopt this statute, but what we can do is we can say under our regulatory power that we will grant AHP status to any association that forms a health plan in a state that has a model law like this, or more tightly regulated, or any HP that voluntarily adopts these standards. And so that kind of approach where there's some flexibility built in, but we kind of set the bottom baseline, could work. And then the other approach to kind of address that, we've got to comply with every single state's laws problem, is looking at it from the perspective of state compacts, interstate compacts, and allowing the commissioners of insurance from several states or the state legislatures, depending on how it's situated, to enter into agreements and say, okay, here's how we're going to do this. And so you can envision, say, a Northern New England compact or something broader than that, a Northeast compact, something along those lines that says, okay, the individual states get to regulate this much, and then after that, we're looking at other behaviors.
There are still federal guidelines that require certain things. Is that still correct according to the Affordable Care Act that's still in place? Are there still, because of the corporate mandate, are there still some specific high-level things that must be covered by all insurance? And you know what? That's a great question for you to answer in the next segment, Steve.
Sounds good.
We're going to be right back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. JobsInME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their QuickPost product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
The best paints for the job site are at the Home Depot, specifically new Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer. It starts at only $23.98 a gallon. It's specially formulated to spray easier and cover walls faster. A lot faster. So you're done and on to the next job faster. Better paint means better jobs. New Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer starting at just $23.98 a gallon. You'll only find it in one place. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing. U.S. only.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And today we're talking with Steve Gerlach, partner at Bernstein Scher. We're talking about healthcare benefits, specifically the new topic of association healthcare plans that are popping up here and there in the regulatory period right now, where they're making a lot of headway, a lot of talk.
There's a lot of talk. Yeah. And that's a good thing. I agree with you, Dave. There is a buzz about this. Hoping to see that buzz turn into some solid comments going back to the DOL, and then some final regulations that really have some meat on the bones and help us get to where we need to be on this.
So as we ended the last segment, I had asked the question that I certainly didn't give you any time to answer. And those are actually the audience's favorite questions that we ask, and then you don't get to answer. But no, I'm just kidding. Let's talk about what the question was. We were talking about there are federal, or are there still federal regulations that require healthcare to have minimal standards across this potential state line platform?
There are. I think it's important to kind of separate the world into two buckets. There's still the ACA employer mandate that says that employers are required to offer a certain type of coverage at a certain cost that are still in effect. So the individual mandate was repealed as part of the tax bill, as we all know. But the employer mandate is still in effect, and employers can be faced with pretty dire penalties for not complying. So that being said, that regulatory scheme doesn't really drive much on the association health plan side. It says this is what your plan has to look like. This is what employees can't contribute more than, on and so forth. But there's this at the state level, what we're getting, you know, if you look, for example, at Maine's statute, it's called the MEWA statute, Multiple Employer Welfare Arrangement. When you look at that, it has reserve requirements, administrative requirements, those kind of things that just aren't driven by the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
So, and those are the types of requirements that we're looking at in terms of how much is very, very different across state lines.
Yeah, I think, you know, as I think about this, I mean, look, the potential is huge.
It is.
Especially if employers can band together and go to the market. As we all know, the mid-cap level market is, and small-cap level market is tough.
It is.
You know, I mean, you basically don't have a lot of choice. Mm-hmm. You are kind of stuck with whatever the pricing there is. There's very little to no negotiation. Mm-hmm. There's only so many plans out there, and I don't care what state you go to. Yes, there's more in New Hampshire. There's more in Massachusetts. You know, there's different states you go to, but you can't really even have those conversations, right, in terms of other states currently today.
Right.
You know, I've said before, and I'll use the same thing for my organization. I've done the math of if I went to New Hampshire and moved my company to New Hampshire, I would immediately make a savings in healthcare. It's immediate. Right off, there's not even a close. It's, if I remember correctly, and it's been about a year and a half since I went, it's almost 30 to 40%. Mm. Right off the top, I could save by just crossing over state lines.
Yeah.
Right? And that shouldn't be that dramatic. Mm. But it does show the regulatory challenges that the states can impose on these type of plans.
It does. It does. You know, an important piece of this from my perspective is that ability also to go self-insured. Some of the plan design elements that could be desirable in terms of controlling costs on the health plan side just aren't available in a fully insured plan. And so the ability to go self-insured within the context of the association health plan, it not only gets you those administrative economies of scale, some bargaining power in terms of, in the case of self-insured plans, shopping for stop-loss coverage, but also it gives you the numbers, the critical mass that says, okay, we're doing this ourselves and we're limiting how much we're paying an insurance company to take off the table. So, and within that context then, and there's a lot of creativity going on in the market right now in self-insured plans, notwithstanding the AHP development, including things like value-based pricing, reference-based pricing, where the employer is basically taking charge and saying, okay, it costs, I'm picking a number here, $10,000 to have this procedure done in one place. It costs, and literally the distinctions can be this large. It costs $3,000 to have it done in Y place. Y place is a little farther away. We're going to send you there. We're going to put you up overnight. You have your procedure. You
right.
go home.
Right.
And everybody saves money. So it's those types of options that when you're dealing with a fully insured plan and the insurance carrier's network, you just can't do it. The agreements and the state regulations won't allow it.
What other are some of the challenges you see to these type of plans that have to be worked out? We've certainly talked about state lines. We've certainly talked about some of the challenges in terms of, who gets covered and what. What are some of the other challenges you see and are working with regulators on?
Sure. There's a tax issue involved.
Shocking. There's a tax issue. I'm sorry. Everybody just pause for a moment. The shock and awe. Yes, a tax issue. Go ahead. Continue. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yep. Just saying. Just seemed like an odd thing to say.
Yep. So currently, under current law, an employer or a group of employers is permitted to establish a trust called a VEBA. And the trust, basically the employers put money into the VEBA irrevocably, and the VEBA then funds benefits.
Okay. Yeah.
They work really well in the case of union plans, for example. Mm-hmm. We see that a lot in the union space.
Sure, that makes sense. Okay.
And so what happens is the employer is able to take a deduction for irrevocably putting money into the trust. And the trust itself is tax exempt under 501(c)(9) of the tax code.
Okay.
And so so there's no tax on the surplus, on the income inside of the trust. And so it's a good vehicle when you need to accumulate money to pay benefits because it's tax exempt. Okay.
Okay.
There are some requirements under the current tax regulations about who can form a VEBA. And there's a commonality of interest, and it's employment-based. And the regulations, the first thing the regs do is they say you need to have a commonality of interest that is employment-based.
Okay.
And then it goes on to give examples. And one of the examples it gives is it says, an example of a commonality of interest that is employment-based is you're in the same geographic locale and you're in the same line of business. As we talked about before, in the AHP world, the new AHP world, those two pieces are basically pulled apart. It's an either or. So you can either have a line of business connection, or you can have a geographic connection. And so what we would be looking for to enable this VEBA funding at the association level, we'd be looking for some guidance from the IRS that says, look, if you're part of an AHP, a bona fide AHP, then you can form a VEBA and fund the benefits that way. Where we're commenting on regulations from the Department of Labor and not the IRS, there's going to be some.
Sure.
We would ask the DOL to communicate with the IRS and have that guidance be issued.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm trying to understand this as much as well as you understand it. You said that an association could become an employer.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that that's a loose term, and we can talk about that for a minute. I think about joint liability, right?
Yep.
So how does that play into this?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll put employer in quotes because it's really single employer for the purposes of sponsoring the health plan. In terms of joint liability, most of the way these are arranged now is on a joint and several basis. There was an experiment, as you know, with Main Sense that under which that became an issue, the joint and several became an issue. Part of the solution to that is a self-insured arrangement in which it's basically fully funded. In other words, it's a bit of a deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
In the structure of a self-insured arrangement, you have at least two tiers and possibly three of risk, where the employer is taking on the first level of risk, and let's pick a number. It's $50,000 per claim. And then the next layer is covered by stop loss. Then you engage an insurance company. It's no longer considered health insurance at that point. It's considered stop loss coverage. And so it's not subject to the same rules as a fully insured plan would be. In the stop loss, there's a number of different ways that you can fund a self-funded plan or self-insured plan. But what you look for, the stop-loss carrier has actuarial expertise, and they can predict within a really high level of certainty what your maximum exposure for a year is. They look at your population, they look at the claims history, and they say, okay, your maximum exposure, we're going to expect you to come in at X number, but maximum is probably about 120%, 125% of that number. And so one thing you can do is fund to that maximum. And you're about 99% certain that you'll never exceed that. And what happens is then everybody's contributing a little bit more upfront, and then when you have a low claims year, you get to build the reserves.
And that makes sense. I mean, certainly this is common, right? Mm-hmm. Especially in self-insured plans.
Yes.
And so, and again, that's the other question that I would ask, because associations may not be self-insured plans. Right. Or do they have to be?
No, they don't have
okay,
to.
Okay, so you could just have a collection, a association that provides insurance through carriers.
Mm-hmm. You could.
Right?
Absolutely.
Right? And based upon number of organization, number of lives, mm-hmm. right, quote-unquote lives.
Yep.
Or you could have a self-insured plan.
Right.
Where employers go in all in and do whatever they do to collection together.
Right.
Based on what you've seen on the law so far,
mm-hmm.
better option for the association is?
It's going to depend a bit on the size.
Okay.
I'm going to just pick a number, and it's a little bit of, you know, plucking it
sure.
out of the ether, but I'm going to say if they've got in the neighborhood of 500 lives, at that point, it's worth exploring self-insurance.
I'm going to ask just a hypothetical large point question, and then we'll go to break after that, which would be, could, in theory, large, extremely large, Fortune 100 companies all band together for a large group plan, like putting together Google, Microsoft, Apple, all as one big plan with the millions of lives together. Or is it just predominantly for small organizations?
The intention is for small organizations, but it's a great and timely question because, as I'm sure you know, we're actually seeing large companies start to band together with, we've got Jamie Dimon, we've got Warren Buffett and Jeff Bezos coming together to put together some kind of mega plan for their companies. We don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but I think that what's currently contemplated for that is outside of the association health plan realm, and I think they're just going to form an insurance company.
Well, they can.
They can.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobsinme to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Life's never perfect, but as realtors, we know living it in the perfect place can make a big difference.
Imagine
hiding from your screeching children in that spacious walk-in closet, watching the neighbor's dog poop on the freshly sodded grass you negotiated during closing, dropping your cell phone in the toilet of the spa-like five-piece bathroom again. So get the perfect place to house all of life's imperfections. Get Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock. And it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, we've been having a great conversation with Steve Gerlach, partner at Bernstein Schur, law firm here in the great state of Maine, but you cover more than just Maine.
True. We have an office in Manchester, New Hampshire as well.
Good. So the Northeast, as we like to say.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go. That's great. And you do a lot of work in the benefit arena. Talk a little bit about your practice.
Sure. It's evolved over the years, but I work primarily in employee benefits and executive compensation, both in the nonprofit and for-profit sectors. I do a lot of work in the healthcare space, just as a result of having come of age during ACA times, and so do a lot of work in the healthcare space, but also retirement plans. Stock-related compensation, stock appreciation rights plans, and so on and so forth.
And you've been doing this for how long now?
11 years.
11 years. That's great. Do you like it still?
I love it.
God bless you.
Somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to. It's like, you know, we do a lot of, as you know, compensation work. And I love the people that do the compensation work and the affirmative action work and all that data analysis and all that sort of stuff. That's not me, right? I get to smile and present it and do all that work, but somebody's got to do the work behind the scenes. And God bless them because they do a great job.
Right.
But some people have to have the tolerance for it, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a wonderful thing that we kind of all have strengths and weaknesses, and we can work with each other and make stuff happen.
No, it's absolutely true. There's no question about it. All right, so we're talking about association healthcare plans. Employers are going to have more choice now.
Yes.
In theory.
Yes.
Right? How do, based upon what you're listening to insurance companies, regulators, how are they concerned about this at all?
From the regulator's standpoint, no, I'm not seeing – the concerns are about the things that we've spoken about the race
quality
to the bottom
and
the quality
the bottom,
and all
quality,
of this.
Yeah,
exactly. But the actual fact of having more choice, having more market power does not appear to be an issue from the regulatory standpoint. It's more of a question of how do we get there.
So let's play devil's advocate for a minute. So employers now are able to get into larger groups. There's more choice. They're crossing state lines. How do you think that's going to affect the market itself, especially when we now will have individuals that may not have that type of buying power put together?
Right. Well, a couple of things I think will happen. The first one being, I do think that if we can get through the regulatory process, we're going to see groups coalescing. We're going to be seeing larger groups come together around some employment connection. For the individuals that are out there that just don't have that employment connection, for one reason or another. And we have to take folks that are of Medicare age kind of off the table.
Sure,
because
right.
They've got something there. They're still envisioning a robust individual market. And, of course, as you know, the individual market is rated differently.
Correct.
From
right.
the large group market.
Right.
And so because of the community rating, at least in theory, those individuals will probably be – there will probably be fewer of them, but that's just a guess.
Okay. So the theory is that there should be a group or association in theory for everyone. And I suspect somebody will come up with an association for all those that are not part of something else. Right. Association. Right.
Right.
I would think in some ways that would make a lot of sense.
Right.
Right? Somebody's going to say, well, there's all these groups, but if you don't want to be part of those groups, come to my group.
Yeah.
The Association of... Yeah, Misfit
Toys. The state of Maine.
Right, or whatever that, or the state of Maine. So you said, that's another point. I think that's a very good point. You said municipalities. Can government get into this?
It's employers that are based in a metropolitan area.
Okay.
And the interesting thing about that is that a lot of metropolitan areas cross state lines.
Right.
And so, and the, you know, the proposed regs clearly contemplate that so long as we're in the definition of that municipality, that metropolitan area, that association will still hang together.
Okay, so cities and towns.
Yeah.
Counties?
In theory? Yeah.
Okay, but not states.
No, states, yeah.
States themselves could actually.
Yeah, well, could a state itself, I haven't thought about that.
I'm just asking the question.
Yeah, I haven't thought about that. But what could certainly happen is there could be a statewide AHP that captures everybody else, that isn't part of the manufacturer.
Yeah, I'm just asking if three, if let's say that all the northeast states wanted to do it as a group. Boy, I'm pushing you to the edge of your thinking capability.
If all of the Northeast states in their capacity,
as employers.
That's an interesting question. I would query what the benefit is. So knowing what happens in the state of Maine, for example, mm-hmm. the state of Maine is essentially self-funded.
Right.
And has thousands of employees.
Mm-hmm. But it has an older population. So why wouldn't it consider joining with other states that have younger populations?
That have a younger population. Mm-hmm. But then comes the converse question. Why would a state with a younger population want to team up with a state of
probably not, but I'm just asking the question.
You know?
I'm just saying, again, for buying power, maybe.
Yeah.
That's the question.
Is it buying possibility power? If instead of 10,000 lives, we've got 30,000
right.
lives
Let's
or
40,000
lives.
Right, let's say the five oldest states in the country decided, and oldest I mean by population age, mm-hmm. decided to get together mm-hmm. and become a group.
Become a group.
Could that happen in currently as you understand the regulations?
Again, it's not something I've thought about before, but in their capacity as employers, I think it's possible.
Okay.
I'd have to look at it.
We're talking about stuff that is being, the regulations are being written, the thought process is being put together.
Yeah.
It's simply a question I ask because you use the word employer, and employer is such a...
It's very broad.
Broad term.
Yeah.
And I think maybe one of the reasons that was used is to allow it to be so broad.
Yeah.
And there are, I could see a benefit from a state perspective mm-hmm. to... go in somewhere to maximize numbers of lives,
mm-hmm.
right?
Sure.
And to get a better rate on in the market itself. Mm-hmm. And why wouldn't a Aetna or Anthem get together and say, hey, we could sell to a group of...
Okay. There would need to be a change to the regulations to allow that to happen.
Okay.
As I mentioned, there's three buckets, the first one being the trade association
right.
bucket, the second one being within state lines bucket,
yeah.
and the third one being the metropolitan bucket.
Okay, so there currently isn't, because those are the three there buckets
isn't,
only.
Yeah, there isn't okay. anything that would allow a state to cross state lines.
Okay, but metropolitan-wise, there could be, for example, Portland, Maine, and Wooston-Auburn. Are they geographically close enough that could group together?
The way I think of it, and again,
or
we're
Westbrook,
still in the we're
I'm
still
just
in
asking,
the,
yeah.
The way I think of it is like a metropolitan area would be like an easy one. Let's take an easy one: New York City.
Sure.
Okay, and we've
all
got
boroughs.
We've got burbs that yeah. are down in New Jersey, burbs up in Connecticut,
and that's millions of lives,
and it's millions.
That's hundreds of millions of lives,
right?
Right. Tens of millions, I guess, when I think about it. That's just a lot. You know, I have a friend of mine who owns a firm in New York City, and he and I have conversations, and he'll go, "Now, tell me again how many people live in Portland, Maine?" And I go, "It's about 65,000. He goes, "That's in my building, Dave."
Right.
My building has 65,000 people here in New York City, Dave. Dear God. Right? You know, it's funny.
Right.
But it's perspective.
It is.
Right? It's just perspective. Yeah. Okay. So now that we've gone down possible lanes in terms of making things, I'm going to switch gears for just a moment here and ask about, since we have an expert in the room on benefits and so forth, I'll ask another question. And this is based on a conversation we had before the air, which was that you are seeing the Affordable Care Act enforcement starting mm-hmm. to be really enforced by the IRS with penalties. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Sure. So starting back in November, we started to see IRS assessments of ACA penalties, violations or alleged violations of the employer mandate. They come in the form of an approximately 8-page letter called Letter 226J. My off-the-cuff advice is that if you or your employer receives one of these, don't ignore it. There's a deadline to respond, and if you don't respond, the next letter you get gives the IRS the right to start leaning and levying things. So I've seen a number of these now over the last 3 or 4 months, and almost all of them have been incorrect. And so it's really important to number one, respond. Number two, recognize what's happening, why it's incorrect or why it's probably incorrect. We've been able to get penalties completely waived just by correcting the record. can't, you know, I mean, obviously every case is different, but a lot of these we're seeing are just erroneous, either because there was a filing error, somebody checked the wrong box, either on the employer side, the payroll side, or at the IRS.
Well, you know, that's really good advice, and we're going to talk more about that when we come back for the last segment of the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we've had a great time talking with Steve Gerlach, talking about association healthcare plans, talked a little bit about the enforcement effort of the ACA and some IRS penalties to be aware of. He's a partner of Bernstein Sure, and we're talking about this. We're going to wrap up now. Steve, what are three top things that somebody who may be interested in this, may be interested in their employer being someone that's part of an association health care plan, what should they do now?
Sure. Well, a couple of things. I think, first of all, if you are part of a trade association, have a conversation. Start the conversation. There's a real opportunity here. And as we've talked about, individual employers maybe don't have a lot of bargaining power, a lot of leverage in the marketplace, but a group of many employers has a lot more. And that includes a lot more political power to make sure that these proposed regulations get to the finish line and enable employers to work on these, work together on these AHPs. So that's number one. If you are part of a trade association, start that conversation and keep it going. The second one is, if this does interest you, either from a trade association perspective or just from the perspective of being part of a metropolitan area or the state of Maine and getting together a plan that way. Have conversations with your senators' offices and with your representatives' offices, and urge them to keep this ball rolling. And as opposed to setting up regulatory or legislative roadblocks.
And, you know, I know the comment period is over. Yes. What are some of the ways they can do that?
Just call the offices and say, I'm in support of these association health plans, and appreciate any support that you can lend to getting these across the finish line.
Okay, and that makes perfect sense. And I know from talking with legislators, they don't hear enough from the constituents.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
You know, they do what they hear.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
I mean, if employers, if you're a small employer or even a large employer, you're interested in bending the cost curve, this could really be a game changer.
No, there's no question about it. Steve, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. You provided a lot of great information. Certainly we'll have you back at some point in the near future.
Great. Thank you so much for having
me. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
You received a request for an employee's personnel file. What now? Hi, this is Ben Ford from Veral Dana's Labor and Employment Group. Maine law entitles employees to a copy of their personnel file and an explanation of the reasons for termination. So what do you do when you receive one of these requests? Well, if you have counsel, make sure they know about it. Next, assemble the file. Under Maine law, the definition of personnel file is very broad and can mean anything that reflects the employee's work performance, character, credit, work habits, compensation, and even benefits. It can also mean any non-privileged medical information, such as nurse's notes that an employer might have in their possession. If the employee was ever investigated for any misconduct, documents from that investigation should also go in the file. As for reasons for termination, tread carefully here, and you need to get it right the first time. Once you give a reason for termination, any deviation from that reason might be used to build a case of pretext. So the reasons for the termination cannot change. Don't wing it. Get it right the first time. Finally, act fast. You only have 10 days to respond to each request. Got a request for a personnel file? Contact Veral Dana's Labor and Employment Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, Dr. Gary Epler, MD, CEO of Epler Health, Inc., discusses how to effectively compete in today's demanding business environment. It takes an enormous amount of personal energy and what Gary calls a people-centered leadership lifestyle to make it in today's business world. Dr. Epler and your host, David Chulo, discuss how to maximize the 5 components of well-being and the 10 health practices that will ensure you succeed. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.